Between the Barrels, where every rider has a story.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Between the Barrels. I'm your host, Madeline Green, bringing you interviews from all the who's who in the barrel racing industry. This week, I was able to catch up with Dale Long. Dale has a great story that really shows if you want something bad enough and you do the work, you can make it happen. So take a listen. Hey, Dale, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So I always kind of start my interviews with this question, but tell me your story. How did you get started in barrel racing from the very beginning?
From the very beginning, honestly, I seen it at the county fair and just knew that's what I wanted to do. And we had a family trail horse. My family always kind of farmed with horses, but we didn't really ride that much or anything. And we had a trail horse that the whole family kind of shared, and they never wanted me to do anything on him because they didn't want me to make him hot.
Right.
So I would have to sneak, and I would take my cones out to the field when nobody was home, and I would practice. And I finally talked my dad into taking me to like one of my first 4-H shows, and I guess you could say we've just been hooked from then.
How did you go from, you know, your local 4-H shows to where you are now?
It took a lot. We had the first horse that I was talking about. We had him for quite a while, and I kind of dabbled in buying and selling a few ponies here and there, and I was able to buy a nice quarter horse of my own at the time and kind of get started and just trying to meet the right people along the way. You know, we learned from, I don't want to say I went and really got lessons from anybody for long periods of time, but just kind of met and talked to whoever we could and just kept trying to work our way up. And finally, once my dad kind of got on board with it and realized that, hey, this is what we were going to do and there ain't no backing out, he really got into the reading part of it as far as other people's articles and just studying bloodlines and everything else and just tried to, like I said, meet the right people along the way.
So what about barrel racing drew you in?
I don't know. I think the adrenaline rush, honestly. I always, at that age, I really didn't care what I did as long as it was with a horse, because yeah, I drove ponies and stuff like that before I ever rode. And I don't know if it was speed or what it was, maybe because I was never allowed to go fast with the ponies or anything. Maybe it was the fact of just wanting to go fast. But once I was in, I was in. I was hooked.
I love it. At one time, you worked at the Judd Little Ranch. Talk about that experience.
Well, I went to shoeing school that earlier that year, and it was in Purcell, which is probably only an hour from there. And actually, one of my good friends, she's coming down with me this weekend for Brandon's wedding, but she worked for Pete Owen at the time, and we got together, and we're just hanging out, and she said, well, you got to try to go at least get a tour and go see it. And I had gotten a tour, and I had rode a few Dash to Heavens for some other people earlier in the years back home. And I just, you know, got to talking and showing videos back and forth. And they didn't have a riding position available at that time, but Stacy Bennett's sister was the ranch manager, and she had a few of her own horses there that needed started and whatever, and asked if I would come on the weekends until I finished school and just work some of her colts. And I did, and that's what I went and did every weekend then through school. And when I got out of school, Judd had come down and he had seen me ride in the arena and asked if I was interested in moving in, and I did. And I mean, it might have been a week later, maybe he had passed away.
Wow, what a cool opportunity though for him to just see you ride and offer you that position.
Oh my gosh, it was so cool. And just being there around all the different horses and getting that opportunity to be around that many different, I mean, they were all kind of similar bred, you know, but they were, every horse is different. And just being around that many different personalities and riding that many horses every day at such a early start in my career, I feel like really helped me out, just being able to ride so many different styles of horses.
Yeah, definitely a dream come true for a barrel racer.
Absolutely. And then obviously I got close with Bennett, and she's been my rock the last however many years since then, the last 4 years now, and has kept good horses under me and believes in me, and just, it's been great.
That's amazing. I know you're on the way to the vet right now, but what does a normal day kind of consist of for you?
You know, I shoe all the horses I have. right now in for training too. So either catching up on shoeing back and forth to the vet with it, whether it be brood mares or just soundness wise, whatever, and just riding, hang out, go to a jackpot, try to go to a jackpot once or twice a week at least, whether it be for something I have in the sale or a cold or something, whatever it may be, but every day, all day with the horse some way, somehow.
Yeah, yeah. Talk a little bit about your training process. What are some of the first things that you focus on when you're training a colt?
If I'm starting from scratch, you know, coming from used to driving horses, I really like to drive them and kind of tie them around different ways and put them in predicaments before I ever get on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the driving and stuff, I just really feel like for what I want them to do, it helps get them soft in all the right spots for when I do climb on their back. And then it's normally not a fight once I put that first ride on. They're normally already broke in the face the way I need them to be. And that's my big thing is, and I don't really ask much fancy out of them. I just want them to be confident and comfortable in every move I ask them to be. And really, I just let each horse kind of tell me when they're ready for more or maybe not, you know.
And you say you rode driving horses. Kind of explain what that is for someone who might not know.
So my uncle, growing up, they always used like the Belgians or the Pertrons for farming and stuff like that. And he would do what they would call the weight pulling, where there was a team of them and they would have to pull so much weight on a sled. Being around that and being that's what we already had, obviously that's what I wanted to do. But I did it with minis and ponies instead.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was so fun. I loved it.
Back to the barrels. What would you consider, you know, your style?
Ideally, you know, I want them to just, I don't mind if one gets a little front endy for my style. I just kind of, in my perfect world, I want to just be able to go across the pen and kind of tip their nose a little bit and just have them fold right around it. I don't mind if one gets on their front end a little bit. I don't pick at that too much, but really just honest and solid is what I want. I don't really care if they're not fast enough to win, that's on them, you know, but I just want them to go in there and kind of be that same run every time and just do as little as possible. I like them real round, I guess, if I had to say.
You talked a little bit about breeding and, you know, nowadays there are so many different studs out there. Are there any specific ones that you feel like fit you better than others?
Well, riding as many of the heavens as I have, I feel like I kind of get along with that quirky attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're not, they want a job at all times and it's very easy to make them bored. But for me, what they need, you know, when you get on them, they're ready to go to work and you can put them to work, get what you want accomplished and then kind of be done with them. They don't really like to just, you know, be joy riders.
Right.
If you will. And so I found that I've gotten along with them pretty good. But other than that, I haven't really had a specific bloodline that I've found. Right now, I'm hoping my mare checks in full to winner's version today because, obviously, because of Sully, I'm a little partial to the winner's version, so we'll see.
When you are looking for those future prospects, what do you kind of pick up on or what are you looking for specifically?
I really look at their hocks and the neck the most. The front feet, too, because, you know, I feel like that's one of the most common issues sometimes underlying is front end, front feet issues. And I try to just, you know, because I've had so many horses that are not really the, what you would call, if there is one, industry standard and maybe a little crooked legged and probably shouldn't be the soundest. And, you know, they stay sound their whole life.
Yeah.
And you got the straight legged horses that are supposed to be great the rest of their life and you don't even get to run them sometimes.
Exactly.
But, I really try to start with an advantage and maybe a little lower hock so I, you know, I have the turn advantage to me because I feel like I have a lot of electricity that I can get one to run
mm-hmm.
pretty easy, even if it maybe lacks a little run. So I kind of looked for a more worky built horse, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Do you feel like being a horseshoer yourself, does that kind of give you any kind of advantage as far as being able to tell, you know, when it does come to confirmation in their feet and stuff like that?
A little bit. To a certain extent, I feel like I've looked at enough x-rays and can kind of see, you know, the signs of to look for maybe a problem. Not necessarily that they'll have one, but maybe just an example. This one's a little longer pattern. Like, maybe I need to get the coffins injected right off the bat before even looking at them and adjust the angles accordingly without even trying just normal first, you know?
Yeah.
That's just like an example, but not too much because, like I said about the confirmation, I've had some of the worst footed horses be the soundest.
Right. You just never know.
No, there's no telling.
And you are younger, so what advice do you have for maybe that younger generation who is kind of wanting to break into the futurity world?
Just never give up, honestly, because there's going to be so many setbacks. And right when you think you might have the one, you know, it might set you back and you just might think you're never going to get your chance. But just put yourself out there and take every opportunity that comes to you. And learn something from everybody, whether it be something you don't want to do or you do want to do, and just keep going. Trust your gut, too. You know, you got, if your chances are, if you're getting into the futurities, you probably worked your way up to be in the position to start in the futurities, you know, stick with what got you there.
I think a lot of people struggle with finding clients. Back in the day, it wasn't so much a client-based industry, and now I feel like It's a lot more client-based. What advice do you have for those who are trying to find clients or, you know, finding the right clients?
Don't be afraid for the right person to get on something that might look like a fool or might make you look like a fool at first. You know, obviously you don't want to get on something that's going to hurt you, but I had to get on a lot of horses that maybe ducked or ran up the rail or did this and did that. And I was okay with doing that for people. And that got me out there a little bit. Cause you know, if you're able to get them rode, you know, the people start seeing that, oh, you know, they can maybe fix something or work on something. Let's give them a shot with something fresh start.
What are some of, you know, the biggest challenges that you face as a futurity jockey, and how do you overcome those challenges?
It's very easy to get overwhelmed and try to do too much when you get to an event.
Mm-hmm.
One of my challenges is sometimes I go back and forth. One event it can be, I'm stuck in jockey mode or trainer mode, and I just cannot, you know, give the horse, trust my training. I'm wanting to go in there and kind of, you know, sit reserved and train on them and make sure they're in the right spots. And that's why I always say keeping at least one good open horse is what helps me the most.
Okay.
Like, I have that Slick Lane to Fame mare, and she's honestly helped me so much because she's won with everybody. I mean, she's a proven winner, but, you know, she'll get a little short on you sometimes. And just having to be sharp and get her all the way up into the spots, I feel like just helps me be sharper on the colts, because it's very easy to think you're going a lot faster on the colts than you really are.
How do you kind of handle the physical and mental demands of competing at a higher level?
I try to just stay true to myself, and when I get to the event, know that I've done everything I can to be ready. And if it doesn't work out, but my horses leave the event sound and I'm healthy, that I get to go again and there's always another barrel race. And I just try not to focus on, I guess when I go down the alley, I don't care if I lose, because if you just have that in your head, I don't want to lose, you know, you're going to put too much pressure on yourself.
How do you keep your young horses handling the physical and mental demands of competing as well?
Well, I don't know if I've 100% mastered that part, but I try to do my best and just read the horse. And, you know, if your horse needs time off, it might, you know, you might have to miss an event or something that you paid a lot of money for. But I promise in the long run, if you're feeling something ain't right, trust your gut and give them that extra time.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to overdo it on them, and it's very easy to forget how young they really are.
It's crazy because you just feel like a lot of them, you know, just take to it so quickly. And so you feel like, oh, they're, you know, they feel like an open horse and they're really, you know, 4 years old.
I know it. And I have a couple, like this year, I have a few that mentally, you know, just aren't all there right now. They're not crazy or anything. They're just mentally not ready to handle every weekend, every futurity. And then I got a few that have better minds than most open horses I've ever ran. And
yeah.
But, you know, they're just same run every time. And really, they're going to decide. And that one that is same run every time, I treat him a little different. You know, I don't work him as much. I'll just long trot. I'll take him to more jackpots and just let him keep making that run. the ones that are a little bit fractious, I try to limit how much I take them and make it count where I do take them, and just try to do a lot of walking and trotting and just reassurance.
Mm-hmm. All right. So say you're getting ready for a competition. Kind of take us through your process of getting ready to make that run. Do you have any routines that you do?
I'm always doing something, whether it be, you know, I have the nebulizer and stuff like that. I try to do all the little advantages that are at the palm of my hand,
mm-hmm.
and I try to take advantage of all that, but just whether it be wrapping legs or anything, because my motto is do it all, and then if it doesn't work out, at least you did your best,
right?
And you just have to try again. And I think it's like, I like to go to any open arena or exhibition, any opportunity I get, because at least when I leave there, I know I did what I could.
Mm-hmm.
And every horse might be different. You might catch me in the warm-up arena at midnight just walking around the barrels 100 times.
Yeah.
Because that's what that horse needs. And I try to, when I go to an event like BFA, a longer event like that, the week before or a couple weeks leading up, start to have the AccuScope lady come in and work on them and just give them every advantage to feel good, because at that point your horse is either trained or it isn't. And I feel like if you try to rush it last minute and be like, oh my gosh, I got to get ready, and just tune on your horse, well, you're just going to have it upset with you, and that's not something you've been doing all year, and it chances are is probably not going to work out. So you'll probably find me doing any sort of therapy, whatever, feel good, wrap legs at the vet, you know, just constantly making sure they feel their best. And that's, I feel like, the biggest advantage right there.
Mm-hmm. What do you feel like kind of sets apart the top jockeys in the industry from the rest of the field?
The guts. I mean, it's this industry, they're horses, they're animals, and they, no matter what we do, you're not going to keep the bad things from happening. And I feel like the people are what separates the best is just, you know, the more people you talk to, the more crazy, tragic things that happen to everybody with a horse along the lines, and they never quit. They're
right.
Always there, whether they have a horse that might not be able to win anything. They're there, and they're just giving it all they got, show up every event. And they don't let the media or anything else get to them, as far as whatever,
mm-hmm.
that's their way, and they stick to their way, and that's just how it is. And I feel like that's what separates it, because it's very easy to get caught up in what someone else is putting out there or what someone else is doing. And
yeah.
It's hard not to worry about what someone else is doing sometimes, you know?
It's funny that you said the media, because, you know, I never think of that as, you know, being something that you worry about as a barrel racer. But this day and age, they are pretty ruthless on there to pick you apart.
People will tear you apart.
And that would be very hard, you know, especially with, you know, all the TikToks and different things where they can just literally critique every step of your run.
I know it, and I don't want to say that's like the main thing that separates them, but it takes a strong person to be able to ignore that, or even maybe see something somebody else is doing, like a training video, and halfway through the year change your whole training process because you've seen something on one video that you liked. I'm not saying, you know, don't use it, but take that and try to mix it in with what you've been doing, rather than changing exactly what you've been doing all year 100% and then expect your horse to just be able to, basically you're retraining it, you're teaching it a different way to do it.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. I have never thought about that, so thanks for bringing that up. You know, kind of a fun question. What do you think you would be doing for a career if you were not barrel racing?
Oh, Lord. I don't really want to know. You know, I was never really good at any sports, never very athletic. Ideally, I'd like to say I'd be living on the beach somewhere, but that's probably not right. I'd probably be stuck in my same small town working on the farm.
Right. That's funny. So you never really wanted to do anything else but horses?
No. I knew that from the start. I never knew that it would turn into this fast. I mean, I've been so thankful with the different people and horses that have come into my life, but I put myself out there for a lot of years, and like I said, rode, I don't want to call it junk because I was able to win on it, but just misunderstood horses, I guess, and put in my time, and I went and worked for different people along the way when I could, and just tried to soak up something from everybody.
Who have been some of those influences that you've looked up to or gone to for advice?
Well, Sharon Hall was a big one, just because that was I worked for her for a couple months, and, you know, being with her got me around the today's day and age, right in the middle of the industry.
Yeah.
You know, just at that time, things weren't really a lot. Well, it was COVID, so there wasn't really any events going on, and horses weren't being hauled a bunch. So I was just kind of around it at the home level. And then when I got out here and went to Sharon's, I kind of got put in the middle of it and got to see it all. And Brandon Collins, I know him a little bit from being back north. I went and rode with him and Ashley a week or so ago just to kind of pick their brain and get different ideas. That it really helps to have a second set of eyes, no matter who it is. I'll go to Jolene a lot for advice. She's helped me a few times. Me and Stephanie Fryer, we bounce a lot of ideas off each other. She does a real stiff, foxy style, and I like mine real round. So she kind of helps me put it in a little bit more stiffness in there, or one that maybe needs to be a little straighter. She kind of helps me with that, and I kind of help her trying to make one more round, vice versa. There's just so many people. And Adam Roper from Virginia, I stayed the summer with them, and they took me in as their own almost a whole year before I ever went to shoeing school or anything, and learned from him. And Sharon K. Bryan, she let me run a lot of their horses at the youth races and stuff. And all those people have just contributed so much in different ways, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
And obviously my friends and family that just supported in general, maybe not help with the horses, but just support what I do and help keep me going, because it really does take a village. It's hard.
Yeah, especially, you know, from the beginning, not being, you know, in a barrel racing family or really not knowing much about it. And your dad just kind of, all right, this is what we're going to do.
It took him a hot minute. It took some convincing, and there was a lot of knockdown drag outs between, you don't need another horse, you got to make this one work. And probably that first one that we fought about when he finally realized, like, okay, it's not going to work. We need to get something that might. And we never bought a trained barrel horse. We, like that, the mare I'm talking about, we bought her from the Congress Super Sale as a 4-year-old reining horse.
Wow.
She, you know, she bucked me off the first time I ever rode her, and I hated her from that day.
Oh, my goodness.
Once it kind of clicked to him that the name of the game wasn't, you know, when it doesn't work out, don't be afraid or don't be selfish and not want somebody else to do what you couldn't. Like,
right.
Let that person do it if they can, and give that horse its best shot. And once you kind of realize not to pick the fight that doesn't need to be and move on and get something that fits you a little better, it got a lot easier. And I guess we could say it took off from there between me and him, and he finally kind of was getting the point of it.
So obviously, you know, the horses are the star of the show when it comes to barrel racing. And I feel like, you know, we all have those horses that kind of help shape who we are. Talk about some of those for you.
Obviously, all my horses I had in my youth days and stuff, I had two pretty good youth horses my last couple years of the youth. A lady from back home gave me the opportunity on the mare we called Ziva. And I remember going to Open Worlds, and, you know, I would run maybe bottom of the 1D at home, or maybe sneak up to the top every now and then. We didn't have no expectations. And I think she was 10th in the finals at Open Worlds 1 year.
Yeah.
And Denise, you know, she helped me out a lot. She always just kind of gave me her horses as her own and let me go on with them. And then I had a real good gelding, Struff Lion Bill, who still kind of teaches people today. He just went to his new home, started somebody out in barrel racing. But he came to me with a pretty bad alley issue, and we bought him pretty cheap. And he turned out to be one of the best horses me and my dad have ever owned, personally. Mm-hmm. And then through the start of it, I rode a couple and then didn't get to go on with them. I guess, honestly, my biggest jump start probably would have been the year Bennett sent me. He's a brick house.
Mm-hmm.
And I placed in the slot race with him and didn't really win too much the rest of the futurity year till the end of the year. And he really got solid and confident and was 8th at the BFA to finish out his year. And then him, and then getting the opportunity to run Beyonce was amazing, and going to the American. And
right.
I've had a lot of horses that I've gotten to start or go on with or give me hopes, and just something hasn't worked out along the way and we moved on. But those couple probably have really got me to where I am. like I said, Sharon Bryant, she gave me the, I ran the A Lot of Streakin' Disco at Youth World, and the I'm a Flamin' Hot Mess, and those two taught me a lot because they were two completely different horses. And some of the things that I still use to this day that were the hardest for me to learn, Elvis taught me.
You talked about the American a little bit, and you're going to Brandon's wedding. Is it this weekend?
Yeah, Saturday.
So kind of talk about that experience, and then talk about all the backlash that happened after he won that. What are your thoughts on it?
I just think it's ridiculous. And you know what? I just feel like no matter what somebody's doing, somebody's going to have something to say because it's not them.
Right.
It makes them feel better about themselves, I guess. And I look up to Brandon for the way he looks at it, because he doesn't let it bother him. He might a little bit, but he's not going to tell anybody that, but I don't think he cares one bit. And that's just admirable, because that's a lot. I mean, there was a lot of people throwing down just for no reason. I mean, somebody just won $1 million, and I just straight up think it's jealousy, and it's just stupid in my opinion.
Yeah, no, 100%.
If people really knew what they were talking about, there's been male barrel racers since it was a thing.
Exactly. I know. And then the fact that poor Brandon, he's gone every year and spent money to get there and never won anything. And then now, of course, everyone has a problem.
And to keep going like that, like to hit a barrel to win one other year he was there, and to just make it there that many times and be so close and the fun be spoiled, but to have it in him to just keep going is just awesome.
Yeah, just a true testament to the competitor he is, for sure.
Yeah. And all those people that are saying stuff, you know, I don't know if they really realize, but a lot of the good horses in the industry, whether it be with the NFR girls or whatever, were made by a lot of guys behind the scenes.
Yes. Kind of rounding out, I'd like to ask these few next questions, but what do you feel like your greatest accomplishment was last year?
Last year would have to be the BFA slot race on the Saul Good horse, because mm-hmm. I had him from the absolute start. When I picked him up, he got in my manger of the trailer and jumped out the trailer window. His two front legs were hanging out.
Oh my gosh.
So he was pretty feral, but I did everything. I broke him. I started him, whatever. And to win something like that at that level on something that nobody else can take credit for was pretty surreal.
And then thinking about your career as a whole, what win has meant the most to you?
Probably that he's a brick house placing eighth at the BFA, mm-hmm. Because he was sent to a few other trainers and was passed by, and, you know, maybe he just didn't fit their style, but Bennett was kind of had nowhere else to go with him, and I was last resort, and just being able to do that for her and lift her spirits with her bond with Nikki Brickhouse, and
right.
being able to give her the little, I mean, I know it wasn't a win, but it was a win to us, and be able to make that horse into everything she thought he was when she bought him in the first place, you know?
Yeah. And then lastly, what do you still kind of hope to achieve in the sport, and what impact do you hope to have on it?
To let my story, whatever it may be, to other people, just to know that if you put yourself out there and keep going, that you can make it from nobody and nothing. And it is doable. And if you just put in the work, you can get anywhere you want to be. And I guess my end goal, I don't really have an end goal because I don't plan to ever quit.
Yeah.
My end goal would be to obviously probably win the American and be the next guy everybody throws down about and take that money and have a beach house.
Well, that is all for this week's episode of Between the Barrels. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can stay up to date with everything by following us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Also, if you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, if you have any suggestions on people to interview or questions that you'd like asked, email me at betweenthebarrels@gmail.com. I'm your host, Madeline Green. Tune in next week.